पराभवस्ताद् अबोध जातो यावन्न जिज्ञासता आत्मतत्त्वम् यावत् क्रियास्तावत् इदं मनो वै कर्मात्मकं येन शरीरबन्धः पराभवस्तावदबोधजातो यावन्न जिज्ञासता आत्मतत्त्वम् परमात्मकं येन शरीरबन्धः
प्रभावस्तावदबोधजतो यावन्न जिज्ञास्तात्मतत्त्वम् यावत् क्रियास्तवादिदं मनो वै कर्मात्मकं येन
शरीरबन्धनः
karma has its resulting actions. If a person is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is called karmatmaka, colored with fruitive activities. And as long as mind is impure, consciousness is unclear, and as long as one is absorbed in fruitive activities, he has to accept a material body. Can you repeat the translation? As long as one does not inquire,
as long as one does not inquire,
about the spiritual values of life.
About the spiritual values of life.
One is defeated.
One is defeated.
And subjected to miseries.
And subjected to miseries.
Arising from ignorance.
Arising from ignorance.
Be it sinful or pious.
Be it sinful or pious.
Karma has its resultant actions.
Karma has its resulting actions.
If a person is engaged in any kind of karma.
If a person is engaged in any kind of karma.
His mind is called karmatmaka.
His mind is called karmatmaka.
Colored with fruitive activities.
Colored with fruitive activities.
As long as the mind is impure,
as long as the mind is impure,
consciousness is unclear,
consciousness is unclear,
and as long as one is absorbed in fruitive activity,
as long as one is absorbed in fruitive activity,
he has to accept a material body.
He has to accept a material body.
Generally, people think that one should act very piously in order to be relieved from misery, but this is not a fact. Even though one engages in pious activity and speculation, he is nonetheless defeated. His only aim should be emancipation from the clutches of Maya. And all material activities, speculative knowledge, and pious activities do not solve the problem of material life. One should be inquisitive to understand his spiritual position, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 4:37. Yathayidham si samitta agnir bhasma sat kurute arjuna jnana agni sarva karmani bhasma sat kurute tatha. As a blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reactions to material activities. Unless one understands the self and its activities, one has to be considered in material bondage. In Srimad Bhagavatam 10:32, it is also said, Yanne arvindaksha vimukta maninas tvai astabhavada vishuddha buddhaye. A person who does not have knowledge of devotional service may think himself liberated, but actually he is not. Aruya krishena padam padam tadha param padam tadha padanti adhonadita yushmadamraya. Such people may approach the impersonal Brahman effulgence, but they fall down again into material enjoyment because they have no knowledge of devotional service. As long as one is interested in karma and jnana, he continues enduring the miseries of material life, birth, old age, disease and death. Karmis certainly take on one body after another. As far as jnanis are concerned, unless they are promoted to the topmost understanding, they must return to material world. As explained in Bhagavad Gita 7:19, Bhavanam Janmanam Ante Jnanavan Maam Prabhadyate. The point is to know Krishna, Vasudev, as everything. Surrender unto Him. Karmis do not know this, but a devotee who is 100% engaged in devotional service of the Lord knows fully what is karma and jnana. Therefore, a pure devotee is no longer interested in karma or jnana. Anya Abhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadi Anabhutam. The real bhakta is untouched by any change of karma and jnana. His only purpose in life is to serve, is to serve the Lord. Om Gyanati Kandrasya Gyanindrena Shabhataya Kachyavan Milikam Dena Kasma Shri Guru Vinama Shri Chaitanya Mahava Vishkan Sthapitam Yena Bhutalit Svayam Rupa Kadamaya Dadarthi Svayam Padantriya Hare Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dena Mandaji Lakshate Gopesha Gopi Katam Charada Kanta Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishavanam Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Pranami Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Kushalini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschat Deshatani Hare Krishna. So continuing with Lord Vishnudeva's teaching, after a few verses of explaining different important philosophical aspects, of course, related to direct devotional service. Now, Rishabhdev is pointing out that unless one accepts devotional service, one cannot be freed from the clutches of fruitive activities, which results in birth after birth, which causes one to accept many material bodies, unending material bodies, one after another. And here he is specifically pointing out, even though he is pointing out basically about the clutches or the bondage which is caused due to fruitive activities. But Prabhupada in the Purport takes it to a step further, where he introduces the problem with jnana also. So he is not just sticking to karma or the bondage through fruitive activities, but Prabhupada is basically smashing the problem with jnana aspect also. So we'll try to discuss a little bit about both. In 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna is explaining, after Arjuna questioned Krishna, he wanted to know about Kshetra Vyas, body, the knower of the body, knower of the field, then the object of the knowledge, game, and then Prakriti, Purusha, the whole list, Arjuna questioned Krishna, and then when Krishna is explaining, and then Krishna is specifically coming to the point when Krishna is explaining about the game, the object of knowledge, which is the soul, and then of course the super soul in good detail in few verses. Then moving to when Krishna starts explaining Arjuna about Prakriti and the interaction of the nature, material nature, he comes to exactly a similar point. Where Krishna is telling Arjuna the reason for the living entity to accept many material bodies. What causes a living entity to enter into many species and get entangled and taking birth in many forms. And in verse 22 of 13th chapter, Krishna says, Purusha Prakriti Stori Gunte Prakriti Janguna Karana Guna Sangha Sat Asat Yoni Janushu. He says the living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying three modes of nature. This is due to his association with material nature. Thus he meets good and evil among various species. And this particular verse, Srila Prabhupada opens by saying that it's very important to understand this philosophical point, because this is the cause which actually is, this is one of the main reasons which causes the living entity to accept many different bodies or enter into the womb of many mothers. And then Srila Prabhupada explains, which will help us come back to this verse. He explains that under the, when too much entangled or too much caught in the activities of three modes of material nature, one naturally comes to a fruitive mentality where one acts just for one's sense enjoyment. Sorry, after the garland, I just always finished. I just can't speak on it. And then in the purport later. Then in the same purport, Srila Prabhupada continues and he gives a solution of how to release oneself from this fruitive mentality or this bondage of fruitive activity which is naturally practiced based on how one is situated in three modes of material nature. And Prabhupada gives a very interesting solution, which is exactly what this verse is also talking about. And he says that change can be affected only by hearing from authoritative sources. And he quotes the example of Arjuna, that Arjuna is hearing the signs of God from Krishna. And Prabhupada says that if the living entity submits to this hearing process, he will lose his long-cherished desire to dominate material nature, just by hearing from the authoritative sources. And he says, gradually and proportionately, as he reduces his long desire to dominate, he comes to enjoy spiritual happiness. So basically, this verse is beginning by saying that one has to inquire about spiritual values. So what happens when you inquire about spiritual values? The result is you hear from the authoritative source. If one is intelligent to inquire from the authoritative source, one hears from authoritative sources. And Prabhupada says, just by that process of hearing from authoritative sources, one starts losing it, his desire to lord it over material nature. We've
discussed this before also, but there is such a huge number of this, huge number of times Srila Prabhupada has mentioned this term, lording over material nature.
As one tries to control the material nature. I was speaking to one devotee, and when we were discussing this point of material nature, he just thought that we are talking about natural resources. That the mentality of lording over material nature means as the resources. Or, oh, people are not keeping things clean, people are throwing plastic, people are overusing fuel, and then the resources are depleting, and then deforestation is happening. But that is not only exploitation of material resources means. It means people around us also. That includes family members, that includes friends, peers, devotees around us. When the mentality is just to exploit for one's own enjoyment, that causes bondage. And that's exactly what lording over material nature is. The mentality is very similar.
So to curb that mentality,
when one hears from the right source, it creates amazing transformation. And that's what happens for in our lives also. We see that coming from very different backgrounds, coming from different situations in life, how attentively we have heard from advanced devotees, that much results we will see in our personal devotional life. And based on what we hear from the very advanced devotees, and the application of that hearing is going to create amazing transformation. So now this purport, when I was preparing, there is a connection, there is a web of few verses which are very interconnected. If someone is interested to understand this verse nicely, there one should go and see how the connection is. We will not be able to go through the whole connection, but it's actually worth reading. Where Prabhupada is quoting from Bhagavatam 10th canto, later Yenayavindaksha Vimuktamanina, and then before that he quotes Bhagavad Gita 437, which we read now. And how in those purports, Srila Prabhupada is giving reference to the similar theme of different verses from different parts of Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and how it creates an amazing web. And while preparing, I was feeling like I have a chart in front of you where all these verses are connected. Very nicely put together. But the connections are very nice. How jnana and karma are not going to give the happiness one is seeking after. And how pure devotional service is only going to satisfy the soul. Amazing connection, isn't it? So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada very quickly, very immediately introduces, even though the verse is just talking about karma and karmatmaka, sinful activities, pious activities, and the bondage from that, Prabhupada immediately introduces the word mental speculation or speculation. He is getting into karma and jnana mode simultaneously in the verse. And to explain that, Prabhupada is talking about Bhagavad Gita verse 437. Where he says, as blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burns to ashes all reactions of material activities. And in the purport of this verse of 437, which Srila Prabhupada is quoting in Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada says that yes, knowledge is powerful enough, is enough to burn all the reactions to ashes, but one has to understand what that jnana is. And Prabhupada says that jnana is the relationship of the loving relationship between the soul and the super soul. So one can quote that, or many people might be also quoting when they say that just being a jnani is enough to be relieved from all the reactions of one's activities. But one has to understand what that jnana actually is. Prabhupada says, perfect knowledge of self, super self, and their relationship is compared to fire here. It not only burns impious reactions, but pious as well. Because people really feel very proud, or at least they feel that they've achieved great things in life just by acting piously. But Prabhupada is saying, acting piously is not sufficient for one to get spiritual happiness. You know, we hear that past time when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan and he was speaking about meat eating. And he was giving a lecture in which he was talking about the ill effects of killing animals and just to satisfy your tongue. And after the class was finished, one Indian gentleman came to Prabhupada and he was pretty puffed up, very, you know, very proud tone. He told Prabhupada, I am a vegetarian member, I never ate meat. So Prabhupada was trying to cut his concept of just that piety. And Prabhupada said, what is the big deal in just being a vegetarian? Even a monkey is vegetarian. The big deal is if you offer it to Krishna. So all the time introducing bhakti. So this piety may give some superior destination for some short period of time, but it is not going to burn the reactions of impious activities. Many people do have this conception, who never go read scriptures, that if I have done 10 sinful activities and if I do 15 pious activities, I will nullify it and 5 pious will be remaining, which is a good deal, I will be happy. But it doesn't work like that, because it does not, pious activities does not burn the reaction of impious activity. It may create inclination to act piously after that also, but it does not burn the reactions of sinful activities. For that, one needs this fire, which is the fire of perfect knowledge, that is the relationship between the soul and the super soul, relationship between devotee and God. And once that relationship is established on the platform of loving devotional service, then that fire can burn impious and pious, both activities. Just piety cannot do anything, and that's why in scriptures, in acharyas are very heavily smashed. Just being good. And when we see Krishna's pastime, and we see Krishna's pastime with Arjuna, just being good. Actually, Bhishma Dev, if you see the course of Mahabharata, Bhishma Dev was acting more on platform of moral, whereas we see Arjuna or other Pandavas did act immoral from material point of view, but even the Bhishma Dev is also pure devotee of the Lord, but from the activities point of view, they are glorified because they did for the pleasure of the Lord. That is more satisfying to the Lord than just acting in piety. Going further, Srila Prabhupada, in the purport, he is quoting this verse from Avatam 10-32. Says, Je anya vrindaksha vimukta maninas, tvai asta bhavada vishuddha buddhe, aruya krikshtena param padantata padanti adonadita yushmanakare. And when Brahmaji and other demigods are offering their prayers to the Supreme Lord, Srila Prabhupada in translation is writing that someone may say that aside from devotees, there are others also who may seek, others also who may accept different process of liberation, of salvation. But they are not accepting devotion service as a path, but they accept other process of salvation. So then what happens to them? And to this question, Lord Brahma and other demigods, they say, O Lotus Eyed Lord, all the non-devotees who accept severe austerities and penance to achieve the highest position may think themselves liberated. Vimukta Manimas. Their intelligence is impure. They fall down from their position of imagined superiority because they have no regard for your Lotus Feet. So, Srila Prabhupada says that there are many types of people aside from devotees. There are many non-devotees who may be karmis, jnanis, yogis, philanthropists, altruists, politicians, impersonalists, or word is a huge list. And they have their respective ways of liberation. But simply because they do not take the shelter of the Lotus Feet of the Supreme Lord, they are falsely thinking that they are liberated. But actually, they are not. Vimukta Manana. You tell this verse to someone who has spent years and years in their meditation or in their dhyana process, they will get offended. That only I am only imagining I am liberated. I will never get liberated. This is just an imagination. And yes, Srila Prabhupada says in the same purport, quoting Bhagavad Gita, that yes, one will not get liberated. One will have to return to this place of birth and death again in this material creation. Why? Because of being Ashraddha Dhana Purusha. Because of not having Shraddha in the Supreme Lord. He says, those who are not faithful to the path of bhakti, that means those who are not faithful to the path of bhakti is one category, and rest everything else, those who are not faithful to the path of bhakti includes this whole list of karmis, jnani, yogis, philanthropists, altruists, politicians, this full list of impersonalist words, because they don't have faith in bhakti. Only a devotee has faith in devotion. That's why he's a devotee of the Lord. So Prabhupada in that verse says, Krishna says in that verse, that all of them will return to this birth and death of this material world. Because they don't have faith. And again in that verse, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes that faith is a concomitant reaction, or it is naturally caused just by association. So what happens when we associate is we inquire about, like this verse is talking about, we inquire about spiritual values. And then when we inquire about spiritual values, we hear from the authoritative sources. And when you have association and you inquire from authoritative sources and you hear from them, that causes faith to increase, basically. And when we apply in our life. So, this is a full connection Srila Prabhupada is giving, and these verses are connecting very nicely amongst each other. So, one time when I was working, we went to a Diwali Mela for promoting the company I was working for. And there, it was my first experience, first time I saw that there were two people, they came and touched each other's feet. And they said, Namo Narayana. They came and touched each other's feet and said, Namo Narayana. And initially I thought, we also pay obeisances to each other. But the concept devotees have is that they are respecting the devotee. And of course, the Lord within who is residing in the body of the devotee. And that's why we pay obeisances. And that's what even Namaskar means, that I offer my respects to the Supreme Lord within you. So now these two people, they said Namo Narayana. And later I found out that there are certain jnanis, or so-called jnanis, they follow a process where the highest destination one achieves through that practice of jnana is once they achieve, take sannyas. So the philosophy is very simple, that those who are practicing this jnana process, they become perfect when they take sannyas. So the fund of the philosophy they have is danda matra grahanena naranarayan mure. Means once one attains sannyas, means once one has danda in his hand, human becomes narayan. That's the simple philosophy they have. And when they obey obeisances to each other, namo narayan, they say, you are narayan. But you haven't reached that stage of realization that you have realized that you are Narayana. But you are Narayana.
So there is a very popular guru in India who also says that, I am God, you are also God. The only difference between you and me is I have realized I am God and you haven't realized you are God yet. So
Namo Narayan.
Now imagine these people want to attain spiritual world where they want to become Narayan in competition with Narayan. How are they going to attain that position? What is the possibility? Even in Namajati, when they are so much against or envious towards the Supreme Lord, how are they going to attain their platform? And that's where Lord Brahma is saying that without faith or without performing some devotional service to you, that means at least or unless one sees oneself subordinate to the Supreme Lord, one may not be attracted to the Supreme Lord or the devotional service, one may be attracted to Ramajati, it's fine. But one should see oneself subordinate to the Supreme Lord, then only there is a chance of entering the spiritual abode or spiritual realm. Otherwise, if you see yourself as a competitor or you yourself as Narayan, then there is a chance, there is an opportunity. I've told this a few times before also. We used to visit a doctor in India. He was a Jnani, so-called guru. Jnani is a very superior word for him, I would say. But he was a so-called guru along with a herbal doctor or something like that. Not Ayurvedic, but some herbal medicines he would give. And he had a temple on the ground floor. He would practice his on first floor. And one day my mother and aunt, they wanted to see the temple. And he was taking my mother and my aunt to the temple. And he came to the big deity of Durga Devi. He had a full proper temple, a proper Hindu temple, all the deities were there. When he came to the deity of Durga Devi, my mother said, Oh, we also worship Durga Lord. We do this Vrata and that fast and all. He said, Durga, what can she do? I only put clothes to her. She can't even put clothes to herself. I only put her clothes. What can she do? And my mother really got offended. She decided that time only, I'm not going to come back to this person again. But then after that, when we went out to his clinic area, then he gave a card. And behind the card, there was a whole aarti written, which was a Vishnu aarti. And from wherever the Vishnu was there, he had removed Vishnu and he has put his name. So, Brahma, Shiva, Durga, Tujadhyave, Jai, such, Baba. And, Brahma is worshipping you, Shiva is worshipping you. This guy is saying, who is struggling to get some money from some treatments. He's trying to treat people and gain followers. He's saying, Brahma, Shiva, Durga are worshipping you. And he had replaced Vishnu and he had put his name. So where is the chance of such people with such mentality to enter spiritual world? This is just sinful. Purely sinful. There is no hope. Whereas for devotee, the process is so simple. And one doesn't have to go through this serious, hard, laborious, austere endeavors to attain liberation. Now one of the purports, Chalrupa quotes from Narsimha Purana. I really like this verse because it's almost same as Bhagavad Gita's verse. It says, Patreshu Pushpeshu Paleshu Toyeshu Akrita Labheshu Vedeva Satsu Bhaktya Sulabhya Purusho Purane Mukte Kimartham Kriyate Prayantaha. Since the primeval personality of God is easily attained by offering Him such things as leaf, flower, fruit and water, which are all found without difficulty, why does one need to endeavor for liberation separately? When the same Supreme Lord is attained by offering leaves, fruit, flower, or fruit, why to work hard for liberation separately when this itself is going to give liberation and much more? And that is a very simple process of devotion which Srila Prabhupada is talking about in this verse. And very, very, in very clear terms, he is defining the process of jnana and karma. And when we see when we read Srila Prabhupada's any purport, the clarity he gives when it comes to jnana and karma is amazing. Someone sent me a video the other day, and I was hearing some Vaishnava guru. On his understanding of jnana, if you hear, you also become confused. You know, he lives in Govardhan somewhere and he's a big person from big mind. But Prabhupada's clarity is so much, there is no confusion he has left at all for his disciple to whether what type of process one has to practice. Very clear that explanation is there, no karma, no jnana. And in one place Srila Prabhupada says, and then we'll wrap up. In the purport he says, although the process of devotional service to Lord Krishna is very simple. Now, although it is simple, it is extremely difficult for stubborn conditioned souls to completely humble themselves before the Supreme Personality of God. And this is actually the problem. Even though the process is very simple, due to our stubborn nature, we don't humble ourselves and absorb themselves 24 hours a day in His devotional service. The mood of loving service is anathema to belligerent conditioned souls. To those who are hostile, it's unachievable basically. Who are determined to defy God and enjoy. When such stubborn conditioned souls attempt to bypass surrendering to God through proud attempts of philosophical speculation, austerity and yoga, they are turned back to material platform by the powerful laws of God and violently merged into the heavy ocean of insignificance called the material world. There is no hope basically. Prabhupada is very clear. Unless someone humbles oneself and accepts the shelter of the Lord, to some degree also, there is no chance of liberation whatsoever. And what to speak of karmis? This is about jnanis. What to speak of karmis? Karmis were just floating in the waters of pious activities. There is no concept of liberation. People, especially in India, they have no idea about that there is something. Some of them have no clue that there is something beyond swarga. For them, moksha is going to swarga. And very proudly they write, if someone dies under the photo of a dead person, swargavasi, or resident of swarga, as if that's the highest destination. Because they don't have idea that there is something beyond swarga. But jnanis who are superior to this karmic, even they don't have any chance unless they appreciate the personality of God. They may not have likings or attraction for personality of God, but they cannot disregard the position of the Lord. Even in 13th chapter, and even in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada gives this very specific verse to explain, which is Bahunam Jamanamante Gyanam Mam Prabhadate Vasudevam Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlabha. After many, many births, a jnani comes to the conclusion that everything is Vasudev, there is nothing beyond that. And same thing in 13th chapter, Srila Prabhupada writes, unless one comes to this conclusion that Krishna is everything, there is nothing beyond Krishna, there is no possibility of going beyond material condition. So these were some of the points I thought I'll discuss from this verse. If anyone has any questions or comments, we can discuss. Hare Krishna.
For the that Bhagavad Gita verse, that the knowledge burns the reactions of good and bad.
Yeah.
That knowledge can be attained only through bhakti.
Yeah, at least some traces of bhakti is required. Even that can, because unless one comes to this point of understanding that there is a relationship between the soul and the super soul, and what is that relationship based on, that has to be based on service or a connection. Unless that is understood, then there is a concept of knowledge or proper jnana. If you understand, if one comes to this conclusion that the soul and the super soul are same,
then that's contaminated knowledge. That's not pure jnana also. And that's why those who are jnanis, they must have this differentiation or this understanding very, very clear that they are different from the Supreme Lord. And they may be attracted to impersonal Ramajyoti, which is their personal choice to be immersed in, to attain Sayujya Mukti. But how will they, you know, how many verses are there which says, even in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that there is no possibility of one to stay in impersonal liberation for long if one disregards the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So, very important. That's proper understanding of jnana.
I was trying to understand the gradual progress in Bhakti Yoga, understanding that in the level to Bhakti, Karma, Jnana, Yoga are part included. So in that sense, for example, those who are jnanis, even in Bhagavatam, it's a very different levels of understanding of the Bhagavan. So we have Brahman, Bhagavan. So, but as a gradual process, the hope of then, by reaching the Brahmajyoti, to then be upgraded to the opportunity to be engaged in emotional service, to be understood in that way.
The hope for such people is only in the association of pure devotees, even while they are in Brahmajyoti. That's the only hope. If they don't accept, or if they don't come in contact with the association of pure devotees, even if they are Brahman realized, there is no chance of progression from there. So of course, they are much, much better, or far better, and they should be respected in comparison to karmis who are just engaged in enjoying their senses. So that's a very high standard of spirituality in terms of people who are just trying to enjoy their body and mind. But when you speak about when we're talking about gradual progression, the cause of gradual progression is association of devotees. And while they are progressing, while someone is Brahman realized, they will not go further if a pure devotee is kind and merciful to them.
I was also trying to see when you mentioned the example of those sannyasis greeting themselves as a Namo Narayan. Perhaps the motivation is not the same, but they are exposed to the holy name of the Lord. So the holy name of the Lord is powerful, and unconsciously even people can get benefit from that. So that wouldn't be the hope for them, that eventually they can be elevated?
You make a good point, but what happens? The difference is, we see the example of Ajamil. Ajamil also chanted the holy name of the Lord. But he was neither envious towards the Lord, neither he was interested. He just chanted the holy names of the Lord and the name reacted. But Supreme Lord, even though he is most merciful, he is not a fool. He knows the intention behind someone chanting his holy name very clearly. And if someone chants out of complete ignorance or innocence or by chance or by mistake, the Lord rewards accordingly. But if someone is chanting the holy name of the Lord with pure envy, thinking oneself as the Lord, how can you trick? It's exactly like if you've been to Vrindavan, if you go to Lohi Bazaar, where the shopping is all happening, and you are walking in Lohi Bazaar and there is someone shouting, Hare Krishna Mataji, Hare Krishna Mataji. You also know why he is chanting Krishna's name He wants the customer out of you. He wants money out of you. Why not? Krishna will know. But of course, this is a person who is just wanting some money and is chanting Krishna's name. So that's much, much better than a jnani chanting or saying Narayan, who is nothing but envious personified in that sense. So, and of course, his hope is the holy name is most powerful and all merciful also. But the consciousness of the chanter is very, very important. And for such people, they have to get the mercy or blessing of a pure devotee. Then some major changes can happen. And there is a nice example in Prabhupada's pastime also, where Prabhupada's Guru Puja was happening. I think it was in Mumbai. I don't know exactly where, in India, or somewhere in India. And a Mayavadi sannyasi, a young Mayavadi sannyasi, comes there to see Prabhupada and see all his Western disciples. And Prabhupada is like sitting on the Vyasasana. Devotees are going and offering flowers to the Guru. And he was familiar with this understanding, because that's very commonly practiced, even in Mayavadi schools, that Guru is worshipped as God or in a very superior position. But their understanding is what? Guru is used as a ladder. When you reach the top, you don't need the ladder like that. But for us, is Janme Janme Prabhu Sai. Spiritual master is my Lord and Master for lifetime after lifetime, basically. So, but he was seeing that devotees are chanting Sri Guru Charana Padma. They are chanting Guru Puja and offering flowers. He didn't mind that. He was familiar with it. But then he saw Prabhupada also chanting Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhagavati Sadma. And he asked devotees, why is Prabhupada chanting Guru Puja? And they said, we are chanting for him and he is chanting for his Guru. And he was taken aback. This particular sannyasi, he was so impressed by this concept of Guru Shishya Parampara and going directly to the Supreme Lord. And then he spoke to Prabhupada devotees, that he later left his Mayavad sannyas and became a Brahmachari disciple of Prabhupada. So what happened? Krishna's name, nothing changed. Of course, some thing would have happened, we don't know exactly what changed. But his association of Prabhupada's surrender to his Guru made the transformation. And what he saw, basically, and he understood, he must have spoken to Prabhupada also, we don't know the details. But it can be possible, I'm not sure exactly, I can't think of any scriptural reference on that, but by them unintentionally or intentionally chanting the names of the Lord, it may direct them to the pure devotee. And then transformation may happen. But to change an envious heart, you need mercy of a devotee. Otherwise, it's very difficult.
In that case, we can understand that envy has different manifestations, different levels of expression. Because he said that the cause that the most of us, or everyone comes in this material world, is because of envy, envy of God. So all of us will be infected with that conditioning. So there are different degrees of envy.
This is pretty serious envy, you know, when you are Narayan, you just claim to be God and then misguide so many people.
And we are trying to enjoy the material nature, it's also thinking that we are not.
Yeah.
And it can be unconscious as well. But if you allow me, I would like to ask another question that I got confused when you mentioned that Bhishmanet, acted in the level, only in the level of morality. He's our Mahayana, and his prayer reveals the internal consciousness that he was experiencing. His relationship directly, one of the 12 main principles and ways how to interact with the Lord.
Yes.
So it does not spiritual platform.
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. If you see the flow of Mahabharata, when Bhishma Dev, he's in and out devotee of Krishna. We all know that from his prayers and all from Bhagavatam, you know. And if you see Mahabharata, devotees, even Madhvacharya, when he is explaining
the flow of Mahabharata in his Tatparayana. He's mentioned, the Acharyas, they explain that how Bhishma, from the beginning to end, there was a serious change happening in him. And the change is not internal devotion, that is always there. But previously when Bhishma took a vow that I will never get married, and then he saw the whole Kuru dynasty on the verge of crumbling, he still did not change his word, because for him a moral principle is ultimate. And that same Bhishma, for whom morality was the most superior thing, when later through his whole experience, we see later coming towards the battle of Kurukshetra, is glorifying Krishna for being immoral, because Krishna didn't hold on to his words and he changed his promise and he broke his promise. So he could appreciate Krishna's devotion for his own devotee, or Krishna's love for his own devotees. Whereas personally, if you see in terms of his own action, even if the whole religious kingdom was going to finish, even if adharma will increase, and adharma was increasing. If you read Mahabharata, when Bhishma was alive, but there was no ruler to Hastinapur, that time many people started capturing Kuru dynasty's property, and they were in religious activities were increasing. But Bhishma still did not change his promise. It still did not go against his moral principles. Even though adharma was increasing on the planet, but he was trying to figure out another means so that his moral, his promise of not getting married, that's not violated. So Mahabharata, it explains a change in his consciousness. But of course, very easily we can say it's a pastime where Bhishma was playing a role in the Leela of the Lord, where Pandu and Dhritarashtra had to come and then Pandavas had to come. But same Bhishma glorifies Krishna, who broke his promise, but for himself he did not in the beginning. So that's the change Mahabharata reflects or shows. And if you read Mahabharata, in Mahabharata, see, we have always heard Mahabharata from a devotional aspect. But if you neutrally, someone sits and reads Mahabharata, moral principles are glorified a lot. And Indra is a hero in Mahabharata, because morality and piety is glorified a lot. Whereas as soon as you come to Bhagavatam, Indra appears to be a villain. Because when Bhagavatam is talking about pure devotional service, Indra is a mixed devotee, he is not a pure devotee. So it appears from Bhagavatam that Indra is a villain, but actually he is not. So this is a very clear distinction. And we have always heard and seen Mahabharata from a very devotional side. But from the scholarly point of view, from general Mahabharata's understanding, it's not all and all devotional. Krishna is there in the picture, but morality is kept very high. And this is one of the reasons, even in India, Karna is a hero. Morals are very high. Because we are trained by Prabhupada, and when we are trained by Prabhupada, we are very clearly able to see devotion in everything. And that's what we see in Mahabharata also. But if you take the whole text as in totality, very few places devotion is glorified. So that's where Arjuna is through and through devotional, whereas Bhishma doesn't display devotion through and through, even though he's a pure devotee, for the past century. Otherwise, why Bhishma didn't side with Krishna?
I was also trying to understand because we had a comparison between Bhishma and Arjuna, those kind of so-called shortcomings in the behavior of character, because Arjuna also has his shortcomings. And from the material point of view, some aspect of morality can be even broken. So that's a kind of lack of character. but it's apparently some kind of shortcomings. But what is predominant in them is their relationship with God. Otherwise, they wouldn't be part of our, for example, Shastras.
Yeah.
So just kind of.
That's true. So that's why Bhishma is glorified. But if you very carefully observe, Bhishma did not side with Arjuna or Pandavas till the very end, because his promise to be with, to protect Hastinapur was superior than to be with the pure devotees or Krishna, and he kept that promise till end. But that was just to assist in the Leela pastime of the Lord, whereas at the end we see his devotional outpour. Till end, Bhishma knew it. He knew very clearly that Pandavas are right. He says also, in the big, from the beginning of the battle, when Yudhishthira came to ask blessing from Bhishma, he blessed him, "May you win this battle." So he knew, but he, for him, his vow, his promise, he had taken this vow that no matter what happens, I will always assist Hastinapur, the ruler on the on this throne, and he didn't change it. Whereas if you see Pandavas, Arjuna acted immorally from the moral point of view, acted immorally in the fight. Karna was killed immorally. Jayadrath was killed by Krishna interfering with the sunset and sunrise. So these things we see, and they didn't object. They saw, oh, Krishna has a higher plan, Krishna has a better plan. So if from the text point of view, this is very clearly seen, this difference.
Arjuna also did the vows of whoever insulted him in regard to the use of his Gandiva.
Exactly.
And
yeah,
he didn't want it to give up. His brother was the one who insulted, and he was ready to kill the
true. And then but when Krishna told him the solution, when Arjuna wanted to kill Yudhishthira because Yudhishthira defamed his Gandiva, but when Krishna told him a solution, Arjuna didn't say, "No, my vow is to kill, so I will kill." No. He accepted what Krishna gave a solution, and Krishna told him that if you insult another person, that's equal to death. So you insult Yudhishthira.
So in that case, we can say Krishna approached to bring Bhishma there, he will change his mind?
He did not.
Krishna didn't approach him.
In the when Krishna went as a peace messenger, that time also Bhishma saw the semi-virat rope Krishna showed. It was an open book, it was an open secret that the Supreme Lord is Krishna to Bhishma. Bhishma saw that form. Not everyone saw, but Bhishma saw that virat rope which Krishna showed when he went as a peace messenger. And there was no hidden secret that Krishna is Supreme Lord from Bhishma's point of view. Because even in Rajasuya sacrifice, Bhishma did propose that Krishna should get the first worship because he is Narayan himself. So, but we don't see any change of decision in Bhishma Dev while the whole thing is happening. So this is not demeaning Bhishma. Be very clear. Please understand. This is not demeaning him. This is for the pastime they are playing a role where they act for they show moral principles as superior, but internally it's very devotional. And that's why we see towards the end his prayers are pure devotee's prayers. It's not, there is no tinge of karma or jnana in his prayers or morality also. So there is a complete outpour of his pure devotion. Because now the Leela is over. Now Bhishma is who Bhishma is. So that's how the whole Mahabharata. Otherwise Mahabharata wouldn't have happened. If Bhishma was not on that side, there is no way what would have happened. It was as simple as that. So Krishna had to play the whole thing. Like Krishna went and preached Karna. Krishna told, Karna said, "I know you are Supreme Lord. I know Pandavas are right. I know everything. But I will not. Morals, my words, superior." So this is very much glorified in Mahabharata, and that's why Karna is seen as a hero, even though he was an asura in his past life. So that's how. But of course, there is a serious difference between Karna and Bhishma also. One is asura, one is pure devotee. Hare Krishna.
Krantrashna Bhagavatam ki jai, Prabhupada ki jai.